Okay, we're back to thinking about the Kruger brothers, and I think you said something about that they met you at Merle.
At Merle Fest, yes. But anyway, you know, it's a very strange sensation being around those guys, because I told Jens, after I heard him play banjo a little bit, I was hearing something that I'd never heard before in my lifetime. And I heard a lot of banjos. Too many people in this world heard many more banjos than I've heard. You know, not bragging. I just happened to be where a bunch of banjo players were. So I told him, I said, Jens, I said, all the years I've been playing music, since I've had all these notes running around in my head, and since you come along and played them, you know, and it's thrilling to death. But I'm telling you, man, those guys, and then too, when they come into the area, they stay with us. So I've been around them an awful lot, and I've never ceased to be amazed at what they can do. And then somebody was talking about, you know, they'll play Orange Blossom Special with a banjo and a guitar and a bass. You know, I don't know if you ever heard them do it or not, but ain't nothing in the world like
right.
it.
Right, they're a tremendous musician. Well, let's move on from there to Merle Fest this summer, this upcoming Merle Fest, I guess. In April or May?
It's in April,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you were mentioning that you were going to have a reunion concert.
Yeah, Norman and I are going to do a reunion concert on Friday. It'll be the first time we all did anything together publicly. And, well, we did a festival down in Cochran, Georgia, 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. And so I'm looking forward to it very much. Because I'll probably be retiring here pretty soon, you know. And I'd like to, that's one of the things I'd like to do, is do one more. In that particular time, we hope to have our A5 replica mandolin. Mark's working on two, and if they're ready in time, I'm going to take them to Merle Fest, and I'm going to get Norman to play one, and I'm going to play one, and we're going to tape it.
Okay.
And it should be very interesting.
That would certainly be a something that I would I will not be able to get to Merle Fest, but I'd certainly love to hear.
I'll tape it.
I would love to hear that. A couple of other topics, and you've hit on one that I'm saving to land.
Uh-oh.
You know which one that is. That's the A5 lower. Now, your son, being a banjo owner and being around people such as yourself, I certainly don't consider myself to be a musician from that standpoint. But I have a banjo that, to me, playing clawhammer as well as bluegrass, has got just the tone that I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
I've got about six or seven banjos, depending upon how you count them. And it has a Tennessee 20 tone ring in it that I believe was developed by your son with help through...
Lynn Dudenbosser was working at Oak Ridge Lab. I've been down at the plant, and they've got a program down there to assist small businesses with the development of their product. So Lynn knew of Mark, and you know, they got together and developed that Tennessee 20 tone line. If a private individual had with the bill to do what they did, can afford it.
Right.
I mean, they did, you know, the greatest laboratory in the world.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, they turned that thing every way but loose. I couldn't begin to mention all the things they did to develop that tone ring.
Well, one of the things that you might enjoy hearing was that from 1993 through 1999, I worked as a science education consultant with Oak Ridge. One of the things that I did, I worked with teachers from all over the country with various science programs. And one of the things that I would do in the evenings is I'd have my banjo with me, and we'd play a little music and all this kind of thing. And so I was telling my students one night that the tone ring in this banjo was actually tested at the Y-12 facility there, where some of them had visited before. We weren't primarily working there, but they knew about it. And as it turned out, the person who had done that work, maybe the person you just mentioned, had just that day given them a lecture and had talked about producing the, all the work that had gone into the production of that tone dream for that
band. I would have loved to hear that.
And so my students there could really identify. So, I mean, he just told them about the tone ring.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I have a banjo that has one of those in it. And so it was really a nice connection from that standpoint.
Mark never took advantage of that a whole lot. If I'd have been him, I'd have had the story of that thing flapping me at a breakfast. It was in several newspapers and magazines and all about it, but I'd have, I'd have played that thing, man, you know, to the hilt. Because now... I understand Steve Huber has come up with a really good tone writing.
He has. I have one of those also.
So I don't know how to compare. I don't have any idea. But, you know, it's just like you can take the same banjo and 10 different people play it.
Absolutely.
You got 10 different sounds.
Absolutely. But I will tell you, I do have a, as I've said, I've got several banjos, one of which has one of the gold-plated Huber rings in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are both very, very good. But they're different, and depending upon
which
particular sound and what you like and so on, they're both great.
In 1955, I got my first tape recorder. I think it was 55. I'm not sure anymore. And I tape everywhere I go. I tape. And Ron and Don both were big tapers, and we all had Sony's. We had them little white woolen sacks and all that kind of stuff, and I taped, and as you could see right down all those tapes, and look over here, tapes everywhere, and in my office is tapes. They go back to the 50s, and then of course all that reel to reel through the years. Well, when I started playing with John had a Sony had just come out with a little small tape recorder, and John had one. Took it with him everywhere he went. I said, why do you take that? He says, well, if I think of a line for a song, I just do it. I went home and got me one. So I taped a whole lot of our shows that we did together, and I've taped everybody and everywhere and everything. And
amazing.
So David started putting a lot of this stuff on CDs. So I went in and I put the Let It Be Known that I was want to sell it, and then some people are interested in the whole collection. So this brain, I may do something about it, I may not. I don't know, but I you know, I'm glad I got those tapes because I got stuff, you know, that nobody else has got.
Well, it certainly would be a great collection.
I've got tapes me and Doc Watson playing. I've got tapes me and Clarence White playing, and the stuff on tape with Doc that nobody's heard, because it's my stuff, my teams, you know, that he played with me. The same way with Clarence. The same way with Norman. I've got a lot of stuff of me and Norman that nobody's heard, you know. But only because they're my teams.
Right.
And nobody's heard the teams.
Exactly.
Maybe a few of them, a few people.
Yeah.
But that has been my pride and joy. And then, of course, then I got a video set up when they were a big old Panasonic had two units about the size of the scanner and a big old camera, and I got one of them, paid $2,000 for it. That's back, you know. And I taped a lot of that stuff, but I'm going to tell you, those tapes that I made then, way better than the tapes I made in my camcorder later, you know.
Right.
Better quality, better sound.
Yeah.
So I've documented a lot of stuff over the years.
I think that would be something that obviously has great value.
I'm going to tell you two stories. The first, well, one of them's going to be George Groon and the Madeline, okay? But this other one is going to be, I'm going to tell you one involving the Kruger brothers, but I'll have to remember what I was going to say about that. But anyway, I'll tell you the George story.
Mm-hmm.
At the time we were going to up to Asheville and those places, I met George.
Right.
George was a student at Duke University.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd got to collecting instruments. And he'd show up And he's imagining zoology.
Right.
And he'd show up in this car with a bunch of instruments. And in one of the cases, now this is not hearsay, this is fact.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the cases, he had a rattlesnake.
Right.
And of course, nobody knew which case he was in. So you don't go up on him and get to our case. But anyway, George come running up to me. He says, I got it. I got it. I finally got it. I said, George. I said, what have you got? I got me a F5. Original F5. Let me see it, George. Pulled it out the case. I take one look. I said, George. I said, I'm sorry, buddy. I said, but this is not original.
Mm-hmm.
And George's whole being just collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And he almost cried. And I know the feeling.
Yeah.
I've had that feeling. And I said, George, I said, what did you get it? I got it from this guy up here at the restaurant. I said, what you pay him for it? I traded him about 5 or 6 instruments.
Mm-hmm.
I said, George, I said, you got took. I said, you know, this guy took advantage of you. I said, let's go up and talk to him. So we go up and I meet the guy and I said, no, trade's a trade. And I told him who I was. I said, now I've been collecting estimates. Yes. And I said, I know that you know this is not original. Trade's a trade. Done deal. I said, well, all I can tell you is get you an attorney. We left. Go straight to the sheriff's office. It's a little vestibule going into the office.
Uh-huh.
A couple of seats where people are sitting and wait, you know. I said, George, I said, sit down and don't open your mouth. I said, don't want you to say a word. Because he, you know, he turns people, you know, he just turns you off when he talks.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of Southern people, I ain't putting them down by any means. But a Yankee down south, you know, whatever. Anyway, I go in and I talk to the deputy. Tell him who I was, what the problem is. He says, yeah, I know that guy. He says, y'all wait. So we waited, and we waited. He come back. He said, go out there and get your instruments. So we went out there. The guy didn't say a word. We made the trade. Come back, you know, Joy says, I really appreciate this. And I feel as if I should do something for you. I said, George, I said, you don't have to do nothing for me. I said, it was fun. And he said, well, I'm going to give you this D18 anyway. He pulls out this old ragged D18 that I wish to goodness I had now.
Right.
And give it to him. And all of that, that's the George story in a manner. Oh, Kruger Brothers story.
Uh-huh.
After we got to know each other, and they were going to be doing an album up in North Carolina, I don't know if I'd come up and do a couple of my numbers on it. And of course, yeah, I'd be glad to go up. And we sitting there, and I get to telling the stories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know that they had a tape running.
Oh.
They had some pretty sophisticated recording equipment in this old beat-up garage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what they didn't know, which I had time to show it to you, that I had been taping some with the camera, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
So I laid the camera down and left it running.
Mm-hmm.
And I got Jens to play the dobro a little bit. And that's the cutest video you've ever seen. It's the, everybody's all out of place, you know, and really good stuff. And they found out about it. But what I didn't know, when that CD come out,
mm-hmm.
they had some of the stories on it.
Uh-huh.
About Bill Monroe's mm-hmm. shoes and about a couple of street singers in Milledgeville.
Right.
And everybody just loved it.
Uh-huh.
So I went back over to Switzerland and we done a whole CD. I sat in that studio and talked till I was blue in the face. Every story I could think about.
Right, right.
So the idea being they were going to release a CD with a lot of talking and stories plus a little music on it.
Uh-huh.
Because they had so much response from the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, as a side note to that, when I was at John Hartford's funeral, Les Leverett, photographer in Nashville,
right.
He came up to me and he said, you know, since I ain't never enjoyed anything as much as I enjoyed your story about Bill Monroe's shoes. So the guys might have something, but they ain't never released it yet. So. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's a fun thing. There's a lot of good stories there. But they like the way I talk, see. But anyway, I just talk like I talk.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've been talking a great deal today here about a lot of historical types of things. And you have also mentioned that you're now going to be quite appropriately the subject of a book. So could you tell me a little bit about that?
I've been trying to get around to doing a book for a long time, and of course things have changed now, you know, and when it's important to document all this stuff. So I have a friend, Pat Ahrens, that lives over in Columbia, South Carolina. She did a book on Union Grove, mm-hmm. did a book on Pappy Sherrill and Pappy Jenkins, and
right.
She's a knee-deep, dyed-in-the-wool bluegrass person, and she's going to help me with it. I got tons of articles and stories and pictures and what have you of the highest man. She's trying to organize it and see what we can do with it. Got a person, musician picker, on the internet, and said he'd love to publish it. So we may try to get it done. It's she's got a lot of pictures. I mean, you know, good stuff, and a lot of stories. And Bobby Wolf, my friend that you saw in there a while ago. He's written several articles, mm-hmm. and we got all the articles, and there's been one or two in Guitar Player Magazine, and then Ticket Magazine, and the old Bluegrass Magazine. So all that's in there, and we're just going to try to include everything, you know, mm-hmm. in it. And she came over and spent quite a lot of time, and all we did was talk and drink water. Talk and drink water.
Okay.
But she's got a world of information.
Good.
And I'm looking forward to, you know, for doing something with it. I'm hoping that we're going to be able to, got a lot of colored pictures, and you know, they're so nice.
Uh-huh.
You know, especially when you're looking at an instrument, it's important.
Right. Exactly.
You know, really, it's good to see it, whether it's black and white or whatever, but when it's color,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you can settle a few arguments and stuff like that. So there it is, you know, you can look at it.
Exactly.
It's for yourself.
Right.
So, Butch Robbins, an old friend of mine, he's in the process of doing him a book.
Mm-hmm.
And when he found out I was doing a book, he was just excited.
Good.
Now he's got a lot of tapes, too. He's got mm-hmm. a lot of Monroe stuff.
Right.
Really choice stuff.
Well, he played with Monroe for many years.
Yes, he
there,
did.
And so
yeah.
I can imagine that he would.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea or as to any kind of a timeline for when this might be?
Bill, I don't know. I really don't know.
Okay.
We've been talking about it and messing with it for two or three years now. So.
Okay.